Okay, thank you. So hello, good morning. My name is Joris. I'm going to present in English. So you can get, if you don't have them yet, one of these headsets and they will translate it for you. I work at Europeana. I'm working there now for about a year and a half, 2 years, but I've been involved with the project for, basically since the beginning in 2008 by writing papers about the project. Right now I'm responsible for the what we call aggregation team, and that is the team that is at the start of Europeana. We deal with the culture institutions around Europe that want to share their data with a wider audience. So we work with the culture institutions, get their data into the Europeana repository, and from there on it can go out to a wider audience. I'm always interested, before I start, who of you has never heard of Europeana before? Okay, that's one. Okay, that's good. Who of you maybe already works with Europeana, has data in Europeana? That's also a few. Okay, and who of you works in a cultural institution? Okay, so there's still work to do. Okay. Okay, so a really quick summary of what Europeana is today. The idea of it was found in 2005. We started working. It was launched in 2008 with the idea to give everybody access to all of Europe's heritage. And this comes forth out of the idea of developing a European identity, so that everybody should be able to have access to not only his own heritage from their own region, their own nation, but also from abroad, see what else happened in Europe, what do we share, how do different people deal with different events, and so on. So we collect the data from culture institutions, we bring it together, we structure it, and we give access to it from one point. That's what we do today. And we collect all this data via our what we call aggregation model. So we are working with about 40 people in The Hague. We work with about 3,000 institutions around Europe, so it would be impossible for us to directly connect with 3,000 institutions. So we have a network of aggregators that either serve a work on a national level, on a domain level, or on a thematic level. So the outer ring is the 3,000 institutions we work with. The inner ring is the aggregators, that's about 100. And then there's Europeana, and that's where it all comes together. And with this model, in 5 years, we have collected so far 32 million records from about 3,000 different culture institutions, galleries, museums, archives, and libraries. It's all kind of material, so it's not only books, but it's also paintings, newspapers, videos, everything you can think of. When it's digital, Europeana can collect it. And this 32 million is quite a lot. It is the largest repository of European cultural heritage, but at the same time, if you put things in perspective, then it's not so much, because at the moment, recent studies have shown that about 10% of all European cultural heritage is actually digitized at the moment. So that's an estimate of 300 million objects. Now it's a question, of course, if you want to digitize 100%, but definitely you want to digitize more than 10%. And this also very much differs per sector. Libraries are doing quite well. The audiovisual archives are having much more troubles with digitizing, because obviously digitizing old film is much more expensive than scanning a page. And of this 10%, only 12% at the moment is actually in Europeana. So that's this 32 million records that we have now. So actually it's a really small percentage. And of that 12%, only about half of it at the moment can be reused and used by people, by users. So all the material in Europeana you can look at, but only half of it you can do more with. You can use it in your own creative works, you can make a copy of it, and so on. So there's still a lot of work to be done. And with that in mind, we have started to develop our strategy for 2015 to 2020. And that's what I am going to talk with you a bit more about right now. So this is what that resulted in. It's a website. So in the top you can see the URL. It's quite a long document, and it links to all kinds of separate documents that explain everything we do and everything we want to do in the next couple of years. And this strategy has really been developed not by these 40 people that work in The Hague, but by the Europeana network. So everybody who is in some way involved in the European cultural heritage sector, we invite to become part of the Europeana network, which is simply a matter of registering and giving us feedback on our plans, on what we are doing, where we are going, and feedback and ideas and so on. And a little bit more about that will come at the end of my presentation. So this was developed by doing a number of workshops, a number of feedback sessions, also simply via email, via the internet, talking to the network, and this is what that resulted in. So first of all, a big shift that we are going to make, which is already happening, is that we are moving from a portal to a platform. Right now, the most visible part of Europeana is the Europeana portal. If you go to our website, europeana.eu, you see a search box. You can fill something in, and it searches the 32 million records that we have. This is not for everybody the most useful way to get access to 32 million records. Most people have much more specific questions, research questions. Like, for example, they want to research 16th century manuscripts and annotate them and get a platform to actually do that, to pull in all these manuscripts that are in Europeana and have specific tools to work with them. Or you could think of people who just simply want only to see high resolution paintings. There are all kinds of different ways of that we also can't even think of to access this vast amount of material, and the portal is just one way of them. So the portal will remain, but we will put less focus on it. It's just one representation of Europeana, and we will focus much more on allowing others to build on top of what Europeana has and does. So this is what that looked like. First of all, there is a core that is basically the Europeana repository. So we have 32 million metadata records, and maybe that's important to notice. Europeana only collects metadata. That's what we store on our servers. We never collect the actual digital object, so the scanned book page or the photographed painting. That will always remain on the website of the culture institution. So we have the metadata, the descriptive data, so you can actually find the record, you can find the object. We give information about it, we give information about the right statement of it, so what are you as a user allowed to do with it and what not. And that is the essential of Europeana. And from there on, we will develop the way we give access to all this material. So as I said, now it's mostly a portal. But there are several other ways to give access to this amount of material. So on the upper right, you see the API, the application programming interface, that is simply a piece of software, a tool for others to query the Europeana database. So if I am interested in building an app on top of the Europeana database, I use the API, pull in the data that I need for my particular purpose, and use that. We want to make use of more use of linked data technology, so especially with multilingualism, that's quite important. We have objects from 31, 32 languages. Ideally, you want, if you do a search query in Hungarian, you also want to see the relevant results from the Netherlands, from everything that's in English, for example. And with linked data, we hope to achieve that. It's a bit more technical story, so I won't really go into that, but you can ask me afterwards. And there on the left, that is more working on a policy level. So we are working, for example, towards a more flexible copyright in Europe, because that's really one of the biggest blockers we have at the moment, working with 28 European Union countries and a couple of them that are not in the union at the moment. The copyright situation in Europe is so that it's not workable for a digital environment. So with a Europeana network, we hope to have a stronger voice in Brussels to actually harmonize and change this. And then this is the full picture of how we see the platform. So we basically have three major, stakeholders. So at the bottom, it's the cultural heritage institution, the cultural heritage professionals, the people working in the institutions. On the top left, there's the end users. So that can be scholars, that can be people simply enjoying artworks, people looking for their family history. And on the top right, there is the creatives. So people that actually see a potential in all this cultural heritage data to make something out of that. And make a business out of that as well. And that's where also where in the previous presentation was mentioned this reuse aspect that the European Commission really would like to see in the next couple of years. And this is ideally how we see things flow. So there is at the bottom, there is the cultural heritage institutions, and via Europeana, the data that can flow through the different stakeholders to the other different groups, and from there on they will get their value back either in the form of love from the public. They will get more known. With Europeana, we hope to give especially smaller and mid-sized institutions the opportunity to reach out to a far wider audience. And on the right side, the creative industries that work with the culture institutions develop new products that actually will give a profit. So this is what we're working towards to, and that is quite a large job. That's why we took 6 years to do this. So up to in 2020, we really want to have this in place. And for that, we have set a number of priorities. So priority one is we need to improve the data quality. In the first 5 years of Europeana, we have accepted most of the data that we would get. We have a number of what we call mandatory elements that really need to be in the data. But other than that, we would accept mostly everything. The issue with that is that when you move from a collection management system that only lives within an institution to the internet, where a lot of other people suddenly want to access your material, you really need to think about how you are going to structure and shape your data. In within your own institution, a number of a particular object can be enough to find it. The people who work there know how the system works, so that's fine. But if you move it to the web and you connect it with about 3,000 other collections, then it becomes really a different thing. I have an example in a second to show you what I mean. We want to work with the institutions to get correct rights information. So we now have we want from every institution that they give a valid rights statement so that our users know what they can and cannot do with it. So this is what I mean with data quality. This is from Norway. Text mangler means text missing. And there is absolutely nothing. A user would never, looking for this particular thing, would never find this because there is no descriptive information, there's no proper title. The only thing you know is that it's an image and that it's from Norway. That's all you know. So for a user searching through 32 million objects, this is less useful metadata. And then the second point is the actual access. There are still a lot of collections in Europeana that once you have actually found them, don't give access because you either need to be in that country, they're geo-locked, or you need to pay, or their server simply changed. There are various reasons. So we really need to work with the institutions to both make their collections findable and once people have found them, make them proper accessible. This is one example from the Netherlands, where I come from the Rijksmuseum. They've become quite famous with their work recently because they have published all of their famous artworks in a really high resolution to the web. They give really good metadata with a proper description, and this is the material that gets found. This is the material that gets used. And they give it in really high quality. So this is one of their images, and you can really zoom in to the details of it. And they have licensed it also as public domain because it's old enough to be in the public domain and out of copyright restrictions. So they have told everybody, please use our material for any purpose you can think of. Do it, we are happy with that, because everything other people do with our collection only spreads the word about our collection. Then our second priority is to improve the access conditions. So as I said, we have this vast amount of material, but how are you gonna help people to get to find what they're looking for? So one of the things is on the top there is the implement the content checker that will actually look at the digital objects behind the metadata and see what is it actually. Is it an image? Is it a movie? And what's the quality of it? Is it the size of postal stamp, or is it really high quality material? And that will allow a lot of people, especially the creative industries, to make a much more much stronger search for what they're actually looking for, because they are, if you are developing an application or a product out of cultural data, you probably only want to use the highest quality material. The second one, the copyright directive. As I said, as a network, we have a much stronger voice than individual institutions going to Brussels, and develop new business models. So work with the institutions. How can you actually monetize your digital collection? We still see a lot of institutions setting up an image bank, so you have access to a very small image in the database, and when you want a higher resolution one, you have to pay as a user. There are at the moment very few institutions that actually make a profit out of this business model, because the costs for personnel are very often higher than the actual profit you are going to make. So we are working with the institutions. How can you actually develop a business model that you both share your collection with the wider audience, because that's in the end your mission as a public institution, as a publicly funded body, and at the same time get some value back in one way or another. And that can also be, for example, the Rijksmuseum is really clear about it. Their core business is getting people to buy an entrance ticket, so everything they can do with their collection to make their collection more widely available around the world, they will do. And yeah, as said earlier, multilinguality is a really large issue in a continent with so many languages. So we do a lot of research and development also with other partners and universities to overcome this issue. Oh, the error is still there. And then the third one, and for me, it's the most important one, that is to actually create tangible value for our partners. So we are working with a lot of institutions. Providing data, publishing your data to the web is not an easy task. It takes resources, it takes time, it takes people. What can we do to give value back to the institutions that actually put this effort in there? And the things we have identified is the public mission and the outreach. So I think we can really help institutions to become wider known around Europe, around the world, to a wider audience. Not only via Europeana, but also, this is where the portal thinking comes in again, also via other channels, by putting their collections into applications, into research platforms, and so on. We have a network, as I mentioned earlier, and that is a really good opportunity for people to meet with other people in the cultural heritage sector that very often have similar issues, similar problems, and similar ideas how to overcome them. Very often we can learn from each other. We just recently, last week, had the Europeana Annual General Meeting. That is where about 250 people came together to discuss what's happening at the moment in the European cultural heritage sector, where are we going, and how can we work together to make our lives easier. And also what's really important, the network is quite good at looking for funding opportunities together. For example, in these large EU-funded projects, it's almost impossible as a small institution to get any funding. But if you team up with other bodies, it becomes much more reachable suddenly. In the last 5 years, we have collected a lot of expertise, both around data modeling, copyright, and how to publish data to the web, and a lot of other things that we are really happy to share. So we, for example, give workshops, but we also produce a lot of documentation. And finally, we have a number of tools that people working in the cultural sector can use, for example, to map their collection to the Europeana data model, to check if a work is still in copyright or not. The API is one of them. And recently, actually last week at this general meeting, we have launched a statistics dashboard. So you as a user can actually see what happens with your data once it is in Europeana, how many people are looking at it, where do they come from, what are your most popular objects, and so on. So that's the kind of information we really want to give back to people working in the cultural sector. Let's see how much time I have. Okay, I should be ending, I think. Finally, so we are a networked organization. That's why we are at the moment changing our complete governance structure. We used to have a network that would elect 6 board members, and that was it. We thought we really have to make Europeana into a networked organization. So the network actually collectively owns Europeana and will be represented on the Members' Council and the Governing Board. And at the moment, we are voting for, this is the first step we are taking in that process. At the moment, you can vote for the first 25 people. So if you go to pro.europeana.eu, cast your vote, you can see all the candidates we have at the moment. There's one Hungarian person there as well. And see what they stand for, what they want to see happening with Europeana, where they want to see Europeana going. And we will then this Friday close the elections, and then we have our first members council. So if you are if you're willing to vote, then that would be great, I think. That was my story, and I think I'm out of time, so I want to ask you if you have any questions. I will be here because this is a really short overview of our strategy, and I can talk only just about the copyright thing for a day, I think. I will be here today and tomorrow, so if you have questions, just come to me. Thank you.